that your body, too, is an image formed inside your brain. So far, we have been speaking repeatedly of an external world and a world of perceptions formed in our brain, the latter of which is what we see. However, since we can never actually reach the external world, how can we be sure that such a world really exists? Definitely we cannot. The only reality we cope with is the world of perceptions we live within our minds.
Time, space, and matter. Matter seems like a good place to begin. The solidity of the world seems totally indisputable. As a fixed thing that you can see and touch, your body is also reassuringly solid. But beginning with Einstein, modern physics has assured us that this solidity is a mirage. After all, the body is made up of atoms. These atoms are particles that are whirling at lightning speeds around huge empty spaces. And the particles aren't material objects. They are fluctuations of energy and information in a huge void of energy and information. If you could see the body as it really is, you'd see that 99.9999% of it is mostly empty space. And the 0.00001% of it, which you see as matter, is also empty space. The matter is just an illusion, an artifact of our perceptual experiences. As you sift through this very solid-looking material body, you only have to go so far before you end up with a handful of nothing. This is a scientific fact. The question is, what is this nothingness? What is this empty space that makes up everything in existence? Because it's very clear that the basic raw material of the universe is that it's not material. The essential stuff of the universe is non-stuff. Because an atom, which is the basic unit of matter, is not really a solid entity. It's a void. But is this void an emptiness? Or could it be the womb of creation itself? Could it be the source of life itself? Is this non-stuff, non-matter that makes up the entire universe just emptiness? Or is it thinking non-stuff, thinking non-matter, that curves back within its own self and creates everything in existence, from matter to energy to time to space? As you dissect through the body, the various layers of organs, tissues, cells, molecules, and atoms peel away until at the subatomic realm all that remains are bundles of energy vibrations. The nerve receptors in the body are switching stations that can take energy vibrations and turn them into touch, sight, sound, and so on.
Now, Ben, we often hear these days about the power of positive thinking. Usually this focuses on what it can do for the individual. But now a Russian scientist says it can also benefit the world around us. RT's Sarah Firth looks at the science behind the claims.
Can you directly influence the world around you with just the power of your mind? Although it might sound far-fetched, a leading Russian scientist believes we can do exactly that. And using a device that photographs human energy fields, he's attempting to prove it.
We are developing idea that our consciousness is an active part of our material world. And with our consciousness, we can directly influence our world.
To bridge our understanding of the unseen world of energy, scientific experiments are carried out using a technique called bioelectric photography. The assumption is that we're constantly emitting energy. Now, bioelectric photography works to capture this energy field that's seen as a light around the body, or what some people would call your aura. Discovered in the 1930s by Russian inventor Semyon Kurlian, he realized that stimulating a subject with a short electrical impulse, you get a burst of light of photons and electrons around the subject.
It looks like aura, but I don't like this word because it has some metaphysical meaning. I prefer the word energy field.
The device itself photographs each finger individually, with different fingers responsible for different parts of the body, and feeds the information into a computer to interpret. One supposed benefit of this technique is early diagnosis of serious illnesses like heart disease and cancer, but some who work in the mainstream medical profession remain unconvinced.
From the point of view of today's medicine, I don't think this can be used as medical evidence. And I would even go further and say that it's harmful rather than harmless, as it diverts people from the true causes of their illness and from the truly effective treatment.
And some of the claims in energy field research are even more far-reaching.
With our emotions, with our intentions, we can directly influence our environment, our space. Of course, this idea is absolutely new. That's why it has a lot of criticism still. It has a very important message for all of us. Because we demonstrated that positive emotions, they have very strong influence. But the same and even more strong influence has negative emotions. But in one case, energy comes up, in another case, comes down. So it means that if we are developing in ourselves ability to create love, to create positive emotions, we change space around ourselves.
The idea that our personal energy can change the structure of the world around us is viewed by many with deep skepticism, but in the sphere of bioelectrophotography, where it continues to find scientific proof for the theory. Sarah Firth, RT, St. Petersburg.
Science is demonstrating to us that a thought is an actual something. It's a physical energy we can measure. There have been many, many studies of mind over matter and healing showing that healing and any kind of intention actually affects the hydrogen-oxygen bonds of water, which is pretty much mostly us. So what can you do with this? What do you do with intention? You know, it's great, we can do it in the laboratory, but can we change the world? They had groups of people where there were partners with cancer. They had the well partner sending loving intention to the sick partner. They found that all of their physiological processes started marching in step. It was almost as though one had become the other during intention. If we have this web of connection back and forth, if this is all available to us at every moment, our human potential is just a glimmer of what it could be.
Children are crying. Small World Radio would like to thank Black Cat Forum, Particle Zen, CNN, One Earth Family, Floyd Red Crow, Western Van, Awakening Alchemist, RT News, Shift in Action. Today's music, Ghost Spirits by Yotu Yendi, Initiate by Morrow, Dance on the Volcano by Genesis, Change My World, official music video. We are the ones we have been waiting for. I'm rising, your sister, your niece, your daughter, and you are mine. Small World Radio. A single.
This is democracy in action. The land of the free. Business buys loopholes in the laws and pays for covert sabotage to keep the peasant pay scale foreign markets humming. People saying, vote for your candidate. Put your money on his vision. While he speaks carefully veiled words, repeating rumors that he's heard, and does it all with conviction and precision. You got spies selling out their own country, wearing medals on their collar, with a tear in their eye and their mouth full of apple pie, these undercover corporals of the dollar. When manhood is eclipsed by the corporate shadow, to dominate somebody is the only way to win. The chiefs might keep their lips sealed while the lawyers keep their eyes peeled, but the soldier knows the captain for his assassin. Solution in the words and water, but because of our children, we've got to try. You gotta call a cross-cut glass to love somebody. You grin while in your heart you cry. Higher up to the spirit country, on dreams of a better world we fly. If I don't meet you by the morning, I'll meet you when I die. Undermining third world countries has become a science. Poor people can be led around like cattle. If it isn't a white corporate country and there's no profit from their democracy, then they prop some dictator back up in a saddle. They turn their mountains and rivers into a sewer. Their hunger just knows no limitation. Accidental destruction can be written off as evolution, but only evil destroys with premeditation. People running and they got no destination. When they have a life, they're scared to die. The priests preach fear of creation, charge 10% for their salvation, and believers grin while in their hearts they cry. Higher up to
the spirit country. On dreams of a better world we fly. If I don't meet you by the morning, I'll meet you when I die.
State.
And that was, I'm not quite sure what that was, but we are now going into Bathrob's Piers Broadsides, which is streaming, unfortunately. We're not broadcasting yet, as far as I know. If I can keep these two guests from fighting with each other in the studio, Bob, Jeff. Now I'm going to turn up your mics in a moment. I may have to hit both of you on the hands if this keeps up. The subject initially to be discussed today is the proposed recall of Sheriff Phil Wowak and updates in the smart meter debate. You may recall we had a discussion on this subject about a month and a half ago. There's been a lot of discussion of whether smart meters are a health hazard, a safety hazard, a violation of public process in terms of how they're being presented to the public, and also whether they're accurate. All these are issues we've talked about in the past, and there are some serious disagreements on these issues. I'm not going to rehash and allow my guests to rehash every detail of this, but if there is new information here, I'm definitely interested, and I'm also interested in callers who might want to call in and discuss these issues. And the call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772, and there's a secondary call-in number, 469-3119, 469-3119. You can also try to reach me on the Internet at rnorse3@hotmail.com. I will try to look at that so that I can actually read questions in case phone lines are busy or people aren't able to call. But I'm not the most... Well, I'm trying to do a number of things at the same time, so I may not be able to do that as effectively as I would wish. But let me introduce my guests, and we can begin the discussion. I'm putting your mics up, so anything you say is going out to the public. Now, remember, don't use any fucking bad language on free radio, okay? Let's keep that in mind. The FCC may be listening, okay? So, we have on mic number one, or is it mic number two? I'm not sure. But anyway, on one of these mics, we have Jeff, who is an advocate of, should we say, the people's choice on smart meters or on banning smart meters. What is your position on smart meters?
Right now, I just think we definitely, first of all, need to halt the installations right now because there's so many questions about what exactly these smart meters actually do, the power amounts that they're transmitting and such. And there's a lot of questions out there. A lot of people are very confused. So right now we need to put on the brakes. We can see a potential train wreck coming up here.
Let me ask you then, are you asking people, are you saying that no one should be able to have smart meters? Or are you saying that it should be optional and people should be able to actually opt out of smart meters?
Well, immediately we'd really like to see all the installations halt.
Including people who want smart meters?
Yes, until they can actually review the science a little bit more to actually know what they're getting. Because a lot of people who in the beginning thought they wanted a smart meter have now read a few more articles, have done a little more research, are actually experiencing symptoms, and now they're not wanting the smart meter that they used to be really enthusiastic about or apathetic about.
Okay, I'd like to hear new data and new experiences on that issue too. But again, I'm clarifying that you're saying that even if a person wants a smart meter in their home, they should not be allowed to have it. Is that, because that seems to me to kind of go at odds to what others were saying about, well, we should have the option not to have it. Are you saying that they shouldn't have the option to have it if they want?
They potentially could have a smart meter if they want it. But there's a situation here where a smart meter is not just your own personal choice, where the smart meter and microwave radiation stays on your own personal property. So if myself elect not to have a smart meter, but my neighbor who's 10 feet away has their meter right next to, let's say, my daughter's bedroom window, and it's transmitting 24 hours a day, that actually affects me, the neighbor.
Let's put it this way. What about a person in a detached house? Should they have the right to have a smart meter?
Well, this gets into certain options. If they want a smart meter, we're proposing maybe we could do it through wired solutions. So they get all the benefits of the actual smart meter, all the data where they can look it up online and such, but they're not saturating the neighborhood with radio transmissions.
Even if they're, let's say, an isolated house somewhere else.
If they live out 20 miles away from everyone and it's not going to affect anyone, sure. But in densely populated neighborhoods like in Santa Cruz, where these things are definitely no question about it, the radiation is going into other people's homes who don't want them, that's where it's like...
And we're going to get also from you some updates on, because you were, there has been a petition filed and passed by the county council that essentially sets the form for a recall of Sheriff Phil Wowak, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting issue, and it got very interesting last night.
And I want to hear about
you more about it.
But let me introduce our other guest who's been sitting patiently after an animated conversation prior to this discussion. We're talking now also with Bob LaMonica. Hi, Bob.
Robert, hi.
Greetings.
And, Jeff, right?
Hello, yeah.
Output watts, 0.904. And this is information right off of the Stop Smart Meter site. So you want to know the output? Under a watt. Okay, so let's get that going out the
gate.
Am I right? I'm reading right from the
Here's
form.
The thing.
Wait, before you get into debate, Bob, introduce yourself. Give me your general position on this, and I'll ask you a question
too. My sense of the momentum of the anti-smart meter crowd is that it's bogus, that it's disingenuous, and that when I look at the website, I see purposeful attempts to create disinformation, and I can give examples if you like. I'm not opposed to the concept of private property and rights, but I will bring up the fact that we live in the 21st century, and a lot of what we are taking for granted would not be possible without technologies like wireless. A lot of the third world has jumped right into wireless. They bypass landlines because it's that much faster and quicker. These devices, what they're going to allow is the advent of being able to plug in a car to the grid. They're going to allow things like feed-ins.
Well, this is...
wait a minute.
Okay,
I'll let you speak for quite a while. Okay.
Not a problem.
I'm not going to go nearly as long as you will.
Not a problem at all.
All right. Okay. They're going to allow for feed-ins, decentralization. You can't have a smart grid without smart endpoints. In regards to whether they were fiber optic driven, or not. What I see emanating from the main source of this political power is I'm going to be really open. I didn't call it crackpotism. It ties in everything with planes are bad, cars are bad, Wi-Fi is bad, microwaves are bad, everything is bad. So what it says is that why don't we even go back before fire? I mean, fire is dangerous, right? We cannot have the society that we have without trade-offs. Now, there may well be, there's been one study that indicates that there might be something to electromagnetic hypersensitivity other than that it's just a nocebo, right? It's just some kind of a hypochondriac tick. But the we're moving now into a situation where we're going to be using ambient RF energy to power sensors, like on bridges and the like, and I showed you a little flyer on that. So the movement is in this direction. It's unfortunate that there was not in advance more education, more qualification. People should, in my opinion, be able to opt out. They probably would end up having to pay more, Jeff. They'd probably end up paying peak rates. What this is all going to be driving us to are peak rates. You can blame the bailout. You can blame Obama.
Okay.
Now, before you respond to any of this, Jeff, let me ask you a few questions, Bob. And actually, I'm going to maybe be directed to both of you. There have been at least four issues, I'm trying to remember the fifth, that we went through with the smart meter discussion in the past. One of them, and so we can ascertain where you two disagree and perhaps where, you know, people who are calling may be able to weigh in one side or another or a third perspective, whatever their perspective is. First of all, I'm sure you agree on the health consequences of smart meters. Bob, you suggested that there is no significant health consequence.
I'm suggesting that, as the WHO calls it, possible, that yes, this stuff ought to be examined. But let's be honest, too, that radio has been around, human-generated RF has been around since the 1890s.
So the short answer is it should be examined, but it isn't. You don't see it. Wait a minute. You don't see it as a current threat, though, at the moment.
I do not see it as other than a hypochondriac.
An imaginary.
Yes.
Whereas,
direct people to Spectics.
Whereas, Jeff.
Many other sites.
Yeah, and you can do that in a moment. Jeff, your perspective is different.
Well, yes, it is. I can tell you firsthand.
And again, I'm not trying to get a lengthy discussion. The answer is it a health hazard?
It is. There are people affected by it, and the big question is how many people will end up being affected by it.
Okay, that's question number one. Question number two is it a safety hazard? There have been concerns that smart meters have been responsible for fires and in different places. Bob, any thoughts on
that? Any technology is going to come with its possibilities for destruction, and that includes fire. Fire is dangerous. Steam is dangerous.
Right.
Now,
but
let's lay this on
the line.
Well,
I'm just asking.
I'm not justifying sloppy smart meter installations or faulty smart meters.
I'm asking.
But
with,
we live in a very complex society.
Bob, I'm asking you where there is, let's say, good smart meter installation. Do you think there is a significant threat of some fire problems, as far as you know?
Where do I think there is?
Is there such a threat?
I have no idea. I would imagine that there are going to be accidents, just like there are every technology that we've ever done on a macro and micro level.
Okay, but as far as you're concerned, that is not something that should prevent people from getting smart meters or from prevent PG&E from installing them where they want to install them.
I would go on the side of smart meters.
Okay, and your position on this? Do you have any? Again, you may oppose smart meters, but have no particular position on the issue of safety.
Fire. One thing right off the bat is they are not UL certified, so that's a big question. Every single appliance in your house has to be UL certified.
What is UL certified?
It's what is it?
Underwriters
Laboratory. Exactly. So
Laboratories.
Laboratories. So every single toaster oven, blender, any electrical appliance in your house has that certification. It's on the side of your house.
Yeah, but there's probably a different set of regulations.
No, there aren't. It's just the way.
Okay,
they would not ramrod this thing through. No, I'm looking at the actual form, one of the forms. This kind of stuff does not happen without FCC approval, Part 15. They had to qualify somehow. These are
not dumb companies, which is the environmental review done on these either. They have been fast-tracked. And, that's the question. We're asking those questions. How did this appliance that's being put on every single house and every single business, how did that skirt the UL certification?
Maybe it didn't need the UL certification.
So
maybe it didn't skirt it.
Why?
I'm saying neither one of us know. Do you know
why? What harm would there be in getting a UL certification?
I have read a lot of tech sites
what
about
harm
this.
Would there
electronic
be in getting
engineer
a UL certification?
So let me finish
which
this.
Is a safety
electronic
certification
engineer
for
sites.
Every other device.
And
this
it,
is actually
may,
this
it
is
may
the,
not have even been
guys.
Been,
hold it, guys. I'm turning down the mics. My hold it.
Very relevant.
Well,
and lots of people are asking this question.
This is going to be political, folks. I'm going
to
hang in here.
According to you, you're the only person who says
it's
irrelevant.
Well, then somebody ought to say it.
We are saying it. It's being brought up at the PUC.
And I will say to
lots
oppose you.
Lots of people are asking that question.
To oppose
okay, guys,
you,
okay, guys
say,
stop.
Let me finish this.
No. Because and I want you to finish it, Bob. But what I want you to do is, again, we're going through these issues briefly before we begin so we can see what the differences are. And and these debates are important. So, Bob, you're going to be able to respond to this question of, why should there be, again, is it UL certification? Do I have that correct?
That is correct. There is no UL certification.
You didn't even know what that stood for.
All right. So we see that there's do you feel that there is a significant fire danger, or are you just kind of raising a question?
Right now, it's raising the question.
Okay, so now, it is not, as far as you're concerned,
there's some
a
red
clear
flags,
right.
But that's not the number one priority
okay,
issue,
that's,
but there are some red
okay.
flags there that need to be looked
okay,
into.
Okay, so safety, you both think perhaps, there's a disagreement, obviously. We'll get into that. Third issue, public process. Has the public process been sufficient for this technology? Jeff, what's your view? I mean, I know it already, but let's hear it anyway.
First of all, there's been no environmental reviews. There's been no CEQA reviews, which is the environmental impact studies for California. They've done no live tests, like in a neighborhood, to actually see what what's actually going on in the field. They've done no measurements, and right now when we're requesting measurements on apartment complexes with 50 smart meters that are on an exterior wall where there's possibly a baby sleeping on the other side of that wall, there's been no field tests.
So your answer is
no,
insufficient public access, public process.
Exactly.
What about Bob? Do you feel there has been a sufficient public process for the installation of smart meters?
Let me just first say that the UL might not have jurisdiction.
Don't go into the UL, please. We'll go back to it.
Let's also talk about Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi spread like gangbusters.
The question, Bob,
when it came out,
Bob, the question is about public process right now. We'll go back to the UL.
And I'm not clear on the law particularly, but you've got the Public Utilities Commission.
And that's.
And I would also raise at some point, I hope we get to talk about this 15-page ordinance that was passed by the county of Santa
Cruz. I hope we do, too.
With about 3 pages of whereases, right? Signed 5-1.
I
wonder how many came out in support for the recall.
Has the public process been adequate in your view?
I would say that it's been problematic because clearly there has been there's opposition. But I would also claim that I can't imagine that this was done to the degree that it was done without having all the T's crossed and I's dotted in terms of public utility commission process.
That would blow your mind.
Doesn't imagine. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that the industry would be rolling along to the degree that it does. There is a town. Give me my 30 seconds.
Well, your answer
is a town. There is a town in New Mexico, and I wasn't prepared fully for this, that is becoming a field test for this stuff. The question is, do we have the time to wait? I would say they did enough checking.
In California,
most people.
So your answer is, and again, remember, I'm looking for I'm looking for an understanding.
I'll give it to you,
Bob. Wait a minute.
I'm fine with it.
So, okay, good. So the fourth issue has to do with privacy. Mm-hmm. And I remember the fifth issue now I'm remembering is accuracy, but privacy is the fourth issue. Is this a violation, is this a significant violation of the privacy of people in terms of other outside forces, whether it's the government or corporations? And again, a brief answer because we're not trying to argue. We're just trying to understand what your positions are. Bob, is it a concern to you on privacy issues? Because this will be coming up. I will. But this will be coming up at the ACLU on Monday. So
21st century.
You know,
we ought to be talking about things like behavioral advertising and targeting. Every time you get on the internet, your IP address is tracked. Unless you're a real slick hacker. All right. How deep can they dig into your electricity records to figure out what you're doing? Probably pretty deep. They're probably taking a sample every minute. Okay, every
but
2 minutes.
Your answer to the question
My answer to the question is it's less invasive than what is being done now with behavioral advertising, retargeting. With your IP
address. Is it of concern to you in the sense that, let's say, I know you brought
yes, absolutely yes. Just like behavioral advertising, IP address tracking is, and we haven't even begun to see what's happening.
So
with
in
that
a
yet,
sense,
because without
so
a
Bob,
computer ability,
Bob,
and algorithm, as you
in, can, Bob, in a sense, you would this would be an area of agreement between you that this is a concern.
We have the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. If we're gonna benefit from the 21st century, if you want electric cars, if you want the benefits of a smart grid, which means you don't have to build these major plants, we can decentralize.
We're gonna get
there's
to that.
Benefits.
I'm interested to hear how you think the smart meters
and
smart
Jeff on the
work,
issue of privacy.
Yep.
You agree with Bob that this is a privacy issue that is important.
There's definitely some issues,
right?
We'd like to see laws in place that actually protect that data because it's going through the hands of.
So this is
parties.
A concern in a sense you both share, but I would probably say that you don't share it sufficiently that this would be a basis for stopping smart meter installation, whereas would you say this factor on its own is sufficient or not?
A lot of libertarians and such think this is one of the biggest factors. Me personally, I am concerned about it. I would like to see laws that in place that protect that data so it can't be shared.
But if this were the only problem with smart meters...
They could pass a few laws very quickly that just protect that data, and I think PG&E is already... sort of considering that.
Bob?
This is going to happen. I mean, you're right on, Jeff. And the same thing with behavioral advertising, which people don't realize how powerful this is. There are entire industries and IPOs launched on the ability to target people based on their IP address and their surfing habits. All right, so we need protection. And the industry wants to self-protect. A lot of nonsense.
And a lot
Same thing with PG&E.
Let me say
one thing. They don't get the self-protection.
One thing with this smart meter, it is also a slippery slope. It sets a precedent. So right now, you'll have granular information of your behavior patterns based on your electricity use. So then once people get a little used to that, what's next? So it's one of those slippery slope things as well.
So you both tend to agree, although I would say probably you disagree as to the significance in terms of actually having smart meters installed.
The direction that we're going is towards an Internet of Things, which is that every appliance in your house has an IP address. Right?
Well, that's
So it's a concern you both have.
I'm not sure it's stoppable. You could probably drop out of it. But in the sense of the overwhelming first.
So there's an agreement here. Let me move on.
Page
okay. So the fifth issue is the issue of accuracy. There are some who claim that these smart meters actually overbill, or in many respects. This was one of the first concerns I heard about smart meters. Bob, you go first. What's your sense? Is this a concern about smart meters?
I don't see how it would be any more arbitrary than some guy coming out reading your meter. Okay, and if they wanted to spy on you, another thing I'd point out, you know, these things use spread spectrum technology, which is difficult to decrypt. But if somebody wants to hack your smart meter, if they got the techno ability,
I'm not talking about
for the
FBI, that's not the issue.
Of accuracy, there's no logical reason why it's any less accurate than the present method of reading meters.
Jeff,
well,
your view?
I know in Bakersfield they had tremendous problems when they first launched it. That's why that was the prototype beta test site, and they worked. Some of the problems out, we're just going to have to wait and see over a few months and see where the billing is. A lot of people are saying their bills are going up 20% or 30%. Some people have actually said their bills have gone down. So it's kind of, we're going to have to wait and see on that. If there is an accuracy problem, obviously that's a concern.
Okay.
The big thing with smart meters is peak power, peak and off-peak power, the ability to charge.
I'm going to ask you because I have a feeling you've bought into some of the myths about. I'm going to ask you to please explain how you think the smart meters work, and then we're going to see if that's accurate
how
information.
How I think it works, they do a
sampling.
I'm not a smart meter engineer.
You're going to be able to answer that question, but let me just clarify for our listeners. So we have five different issues around smart meters. If anyone would like to call in and ask questions around or express concerns or experiences around these issues, ask questions individually of our guests, you're welcome to do so, 427-3772, 469-3119. And now,
one sentence.
Before the one sentence, what issue would you like to talk about, Bob?
About off-peak power and peak power and smart meters.
Okay,
with
peak power.
All right, this is from a publication called Electronic Component News.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick so we can make sure we're even on the same page here, because this is part of the frustration, is sometimes we get in debates and we're not even understanding how smart meters work. Can you please explain to me how a smart meter on our house interacts with the grid and how it actually saves energy and how it actually reads energy.
I didn't say
usage.
It saves energy.
Okay.
Let me explain to me the benefits and how a smart meter works.
Okay.
I'm going to read from Electronic Component News. Maybe they're biased. You know, they're in it for the money. Maybe they're fascists. Let's hear what they have to say.
I don't care.
Might be corporate stooges.
Let's hear what they have
to say.
Okay,
this is ECN Magazine Newsfeed 2011-05. So what's the difference between a regular digital meter and a smart meter? And how can a smart meter save energy? In a word, interactivity. Mm-hmm. A traditional electrical meter measures the total consumption of electricity in your home. Smart meters can communicate with in-home displays to let you know how much energy you're using. It even tell you the time of day the energy was used. You can use this type of information to monitor usage during peak versus off-peak hours, and as a result, manage your energy efficiency and costs. In addition, this energy information coming to and from your home through your smart meter can be run through a home energy management system, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. So I'm going to let you know something really quick here.
You're going to let me know something. Well, I really thank you for
well,
that.
Well, just so you know, I've talked directly with the with the director of smart meters at PG&E, and I asked them very specifically how a smart meter works. So I'm going to let you know right off the bat that a smart meter, when it is installed, is not measuring peak time usage whatsoever.
It's measuring time, Jeff.
It's measuring time,
isn't
but you're not
time?
You're not
so,
being
so
billed.
Well, when PG&E decides,
okay, Bob, let him finish.
Let me explain.
Go ahead.
Time of use meters have existed for 10 years or more. That nothing. A smart meter is not bringing anything new. There are already time of use meters that exist and have existed for 10 years. So that's nothing new.
In industrial settings.
No, for residences.
Really?
You can actually call PG&E and request a time-of-use digital meter. There's wireless, the wireless grid and smart grid has nothing to do with time-of-use metering. So, but when a smart meter is installed on your home, it is set to default to monthly reading. So it just tells you how much usage you used in 1 month, just like your analog meter. That's I've talked directly to them. That's how it works. In the future, you will have the opportunity to choose a time of use schedule if you wish. But right now, that's not what they're actually doing.
So you just
people that have smart meters installed can go on the web and look at their energy output right here in Santa Cruz County. I've read letters to the editor to that effect. It goes along with what I've read. They're doing their best, PG&E, not only to be able to jack up the rates, I'll grant you, but be able to be more transparent in the 21st century. People expect this transparency. But clearly, if peak power is between hour X and hour Y, if they're doing a sampling, which I think they are at least once a minute, they're pinging the meter, they're getting a very clear record of how much power you're using and when. And that's
they're measuring the hour.
They're measured. I would say they're measuring even more than by the hour.
Right now, they're measuring by the hour. This is directly from the director of smart meters.
I've talked to these people. If you want to look up
let me ask you, Jeff, who did you speak to at smart meters?
Jim Meadows, and then also the former, his predecessor was the director of smart meters as well.
His name?
It's actually a gal. I forget what her name is. I talked to her at the break during the CPUC hearing.
And when did
this was last Wednesday.
Now, let's talk a little bit about this PUC hearing and what you learned there. And Bob, we're leaving the debate for a moment here because we want to get a kind of an update on what happened at the PUC hearing. Go ahead.
Okay, but I hope we can come back to explaining also how a smart meter works, because there's... Can I ask just one question real quick to see if he's aware of this? Is just...
If it's okay with Bob, it's okay with me. Bob?
Okay. Does a smart meter interact with the electrical grid in any way whatsoever? Do you think it does, or yes or no?
No, it's not supposed to, Jeff.
Okay.
It's supposed to read the drain on the circuit at that point. That's the useful data that it produces.
Yeah. Okay, and that data could be actually uploaded once a month to PG&E, and they could actually glean the exact same information from that data instead of giving it every six times a day. They could get that exact same information without a wireless network.
Would you agree with that, Bob?
This is old stuff. We talked about this before, whether they go wireless or you know, there's a technology called broadband over power lines, which is going to bring broadband to people in rural areas. The difficulty is...
Answer the question, Bob.
No, yeah. I'm just saying that there are technologies. The reason why I would assume they want the wireless option is that it's fast to install. It's less expensive.
It's less expensive.
That's right.
It's fast to install, and it has inherent dangers that people do not want on their home.
As I said before, those that don't want it should, in my opinion, be able to opt out, but they're going to end up paying probably 24/7 peak hour rates.
And if this is actually based on medical condition that they're opting out, there's actually PUC code that says the PUC cannot discriminate and charge higher rates for customers based on medical conditions. So just right there, they'd be violating their own guidelines.
Did Bob answer the question for you? Bob, did you feel you answered the question in terms of whether, again, the question had to do with whether the
Smart meter interact with the smart grid or with the grid in any way?
And what's
supposed to?
And what's the significance? Hold it, guys, what's the significance?
So,
all right, hold it. I've turned down your mics. What's the significance of the question?
So the question is, why do we need a wireless network in the first place if it's not interacting with the grid whatsoever?
So maybe Bob can answer that.
Why not just have a meter reader read that information?
The detailing and the accuracy. I'm trying to come to a site where I'm sure it's more. They're paying, I would say, every minute. Or every 5 minutes, they're pinging constantly.
They're pinging constantly.
All right, that's not what you said. That's why it's called a smart meter, because it's reading it on a fairly constant basis. They're paying. They're taking a reading very regularly. And as I understand it, there are relay mesh networks set up that it can transmit. These are pretty low power, under a watt, as I've read to you from the thing. Now, the folks that argued that it should be wired in, fiber optics or whatever, in my opinion, once again, those that I would say, and I'm not on the PUC commission, would wish that option, if they're willing to pay for it, should be able to get it.
Well, the question is, why do we even need the network in the first place? When we could get the
same information from a meter reader. I keep saying you cannot get that accuracy of
reading.
Yes,
I can. Time of use meters have existed.
Then what are they going to do? Are they going to go over there and scan for the month's reading once a month?
That's what they've been doing for 50 years. You could get that exact same information without a mesh network, without any kind of network.
So let's leave this question, because
what is fundamentally wrong?
Guys,
I
want to move on. I want to move on here.
It's a wireless network.
Okay, so there's a difference. There's a difference. Hold it, boys. I've turned down. Let's turn now to the question. Let's turn now to the question of the answer to the. I mean, I see Bob's point has been, you know, there is more frequent and hence more accurate reading if you have a smart meter, because it does ping so frequently. Your claim is
a time of use meter that's not wireless can get the exact same information
at the same cost.
Well, they have to have a meter reader. So what this really comes down to
is that the only, or is there a difference in equipment cost?
They already had the time of use meters.
Right. Are they more expensive to install than smart meters?
No.
Less.
So the only
difference in expense is the meter reader.
Exactly. So
okay.
What this comes down to is it should really be labeled a wireless mesh billing network. That's
so,
what it does.
So, and this actually was the sixth issue that I didn't mention.
What's stupid about that?
This is, guys, this, turn down your mics, guys. The sixth issue that I brought up was labor and its impact on labor and employment. And that, of course, means it eliminates a class of workers, which some would say, well, you know, you get rid of saddle makers when the horses go out. Others would say differently. We have a caller, however, who may say something even more, although I'm going to try to get you to talk about the PUC hearing, and also we want to talk about WOAC and the proposed recall.
Yeah.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Bob and myself and our Jeff, our second guest. I feel like a guest sometimes in here. How you doing, caller?
Hi.
Hi, can you hear us?
Yes.
Speak loudly, because I'm having trouble hearing you.
Do I need to turn my thing off?
Just speak loudly into the... You need to turn your... Get away from your computer while you're listening to this.
Okay.
Not so much because of the electromagnetic radiation, but more because there's a gap. There's a delay. So, yeah, what's your thought, caller? You got a question for one of our experts here?
I was at the PUC meeting, and I just wanted to verify a point.
Go ahead.
Am I on?
You are on. You are on.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Sure.
I was at the PUC meeting, and I was very surprised to understand that what they said, and I'm saying the PG&E people, the manufacturers, they were saying that they only take a reading six times a day, and yes, they are pinging every 4 seconds, but they're pinging only for connection verification. It's not a reading.
95% of the transmissions are just to maintain the network.
Yes.
Okay.
And as for me, it's like, it's crazy, because why do I have to be microwaved every 4 seconds so they can have a connection?
Don't you want to help the profits of the company? Come on. Show some respect.
Well, it's almost as though the meters...
Are they going to pay my medical bills?
Well, now, again, that, of course, is a major issue as to whether there's a health problem. I know many people... Have you had health problems with smart meters?
Yes, I have.
What health problems have you had?
My heart feels very heavy. My left ear, it's hard to hear out of. It feels like it's like a noise is there. And the top of my head hurts. And then I have trouble sleeping at night.
When did this begin?
It was about, I think now, about 3 weeks ago.
When was the smart meters installed?
Well, see, we don't know, because they were installed up to a block away, and we didn't know it at the time.
When did you learn about smart meters?
And, well, I've known about smart meters for about a year. But two other neighbors had trouble sleeping at the same time that I started having trouble sleeping. And then we didn't know what was going on, and then about a week later, we discovered the smart meters, but we don't know exactly the timing, you know, of when they were put in.
Fair enough. Any other thoughts for our guests who are having a great conversation off to the side here?
Well, they're doing a great job, so I'll hang up so I
really?
Can hear more.
All right. Well, thank you, caller.
And thank you.
All right. Let's get to the PUC hearing. What happened there that you think was of note that Bob and I might be interested in? And listeners, of course, as well, although we're more important.
What was being discussed at the PUC is, so PG&E has already conceded that there is going to be an opt-out. But what they're really trying to push is they want what's called a radio-off opt-out, which means they will install a smart meter on every single home, but then they'll just turn the radio off. For a lot of people, that's not okay, because this is another concept that... there has actually been a lot of research done, is that the very nature of the smart meter is, because it actually has electronic components within the meter, what happens is they take the very high power, have to downgrade that power, then to DC, and then to the transmitter. So in that power switch, right there within those components, actually creates what's called dirty electricity, or the potential for dirty electricity, which then resonates through your home wiring, which has a similar effect to RF radiation throughout your entire home.
Theoretical or proven?
It's actually proven. There's been a lot of studies on dirty electricity.
And we can find these studies. Where do you suggest people go if they want to look at this?
Just
study?
Google it, look it up. A lot of
look up what under what word?
Dirty electricity. A lot of it has to do with sensitive electrical equipment. Also, mm-hmm. It can actually damage electrical equipment if you get a dirty signal. So technology companies make sure they get a real clean sine wave, but then there's also health effects as well.
So this was brought up at the PUC that was a matter of concern, that they were going to, at least opponents of this radio opt-out said they were concerned about dirty electricity.
Yeah, and the question is, if they're going to have a radio off that a meter reader is going to have to come out and look at anyway, and then the smart meters, when they're installed, are still recording just your monthly consumption. So really, there's absolutely no difference between what an analog meter is doing and a smart meter with the radio turned off. So why not just keep the analog meter, and then you've got no problems at all?
Well, why would the people who are installing these meters and backing them not want to agree to that? I mean, what's the rationale for opposing that, then, if they have to send out workers anyway? Why do they want to keep the smart meters, then, if they're going to have to same amount of labor?
That is a good question. As far as... They have the plan. They'd like to have the option to use those radios later. A lot of the questions are what's coming down the pike. What do they have plans?
Bob,
and they're not
some,
telling us.
Bob may have some thoughts on this. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, this is on the PG&E.com/smart meter site. See your energy use by month, by day, by the hour.
So?
I'm going to tell you a low-tech solution to that. Right now, if you're really curious and you want to know what your daily consumption is, go out and look at your analog meter. Write down the numbers, and then tomorrow at the same time, go out and look at your meter and write down the numbers. You will know exactly what your daily use is.
Again,
no
I'm trying
mesh network, no
that,
smart
and,
meter.
And that's,
not,
that's
not how you
okay, hold it, everybody. That's an interesting, you know, that's an interesting piece. That's an interesting piece
I've
of.
Been doing that for
that's
years.
You're both off mic. That's an interesting bit of information. But again, I was asking Bob, what about this issue of? You said I thought you had a response to why PG&E is going to press on if it's going to do this radio opt out that will require meter people to come to the house anyway. Why would they want to do this? Do you have any information or thoughts on that?
I've got another point if you don't.
Right, but Bob's first.
Yeah, I could give a point.
Okay,
fine. Mine.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bob. Bob, go ahead. I'm listening.
The point would be efficiency, all right, mm-hmm. which is why you don't want a meter reader out at your house every hour, and PG&E is off wherever they are. Yes, things can be dangerous. And they certainly can be, and they can lead down directions that we're not aware of. But I think that's the nature of the
that's not
human
answering the question.
Social condition. It's answering it to the best of my honest ability.
Keep it, Bob. The
without trying to be a fearmonger.
The question was, if there's the same number of visits from a PG&E meter reader with this radio opt-out, and would there be the same number of visits, or would it be different?
Yeah, it would be the exact same thing.
What would be the advantage of having the smart meters in?
You would know your the advantage from the PG&E standpoint.
Yeah,
or from
the PG&E
standpoint is they can jack up your rates during peak.
Now we're talking. All right. All right. It's time to get some stock here.
Wait a minute. Didn't I say that about an hour ago?
And
I
the
did.
Other
we all agree that we
let me explain something else, too.
30 more seconds. The other part of this is the Internet of Things, smart appliances, which are going to come in the next 5-10 years when you buy, even now when you buy a dishwasher, it's got circuitry that will allow it to be more efficient with the grid, as I understand it. Can I read one thing?
Just
about
30 seconds is up, and Bob, you can read it, but he had something he wanted to say in response.
Go ahead. Okay. The other reason that they're rushing to put all of these meters in, the smart meters in, as fast as they possibly can, has to do with rates, because later on, once the science, technology, and everything catches up with them, and they realize that they have to provide an opt-out, PG&E wants to cry and boo-hoo about how much money they spent installing these meters so they can justify charging a higher rate to the PUC. That's exactly what it is. They're putting them in as fast as they can so that they can then complain how much
this
money
this is speculation, or you've got internal memos on this?
This seems to be what's going on.
This is speculation, or you have internal memos on this?
No internal memos, but that seems to be, and a lot of people have seen this pattern before with other deployments of things. And PG&E already...
What other deployments of what things?
I can't say exactly what those are, but
okay.
The
attorney I'm not saying
that,
you're not right. I'm just wondering what information we have.
The attorney worked for a lot of other companies, such as Sprint and Qwest, who's installed fiber optic and such, and they said this is a typical strategy, and they will try to recoup all
the
their
attorney
costs.
Being.
This was Jim Tobin,
who is what, at the PUC
and
hearing, or
yes, he's actually representing cities and counties pro bono on this, working to get an opt-out.
Now let's talk about opt-out for a moment, yeah. Although I'm probably skipping some important PUC stuff. If there's more that came up,
what
PUC?
What was really interesting, and what I was trying to ask Bob, was actually his understanding of how smart meters work and if they interact with the grid. So I just
what
need
did
to,
I say? Did I say?
Well, let me.
What did
just,
I say?
I'm not going to quote you. I just want to make a point right now. Is it became very clear, and PG&E confirmed this, that the smart meters do not interact with the grid at all.
What did I say when you asked me?
You said no, they don't.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I just wanted to put
you.
That in one clear,
really
concise sentence
no,
so everyone
I'm
can
not
connect
defend,
the dots.
I'm not going to sit here and
I'm
defend.
Not, I'm not talking about
minute.
You.
I'm not going to sit here and defend some corporation with legions of lawyers. All right? They have legions of lawyers, like any corporation does, hired to protect their interests. And
PG&E,
they
were talking about?
PG&E, HP,
well,
Apple,
well, don't
you
defend
name.
Them, but we,
okay.
have, we have 10 minutes
right.
left before my next guest, so I got
to
move on.
I just
want to
dispel the myth.
Hang on.
Guys,
they do not.
Okay, I think that's been cleared up now four times.
Just wanted to make sure.
Okay.
Four times.
Well, we need to go on. We need
one last thing. This will take me less than a minute.
It should take less than 20 seconds.
Might be old enough to remember crystal radios. ambient electromagnetic energy harvested as power source. We're at the edge now of using RF energy to harvest enough power to draw sensors, for example, to monitor bridges and the like. This is going to happen.
Okay,
this
that's
we
20
are
seconds.
Entering an internet
good.
Of things.
Okay, fine. And I'm not saying that's wrong or bad or useless information. I'm saying that I want to know what else happened at the PUC that's interesting, and I got 10 minutes to figure out that and talk about WOAC and get any phone calls.
Yeah,
that's why I'm cutting people off.
As far as the PUC, not much more super interesting happened. The judgment is what's going to be really interesting, so it's kind of like we're waiting right now to see what happens. Although today at the PUC, this was very interesting.
Is there a daily hearing at the PUC?
I think every 2 weeks they have hearings.
So you were
at
a hearing, what, 2 weeks ago? Or?
It was last Wednesday was what's called the workshop that was done on the opt-out,
okay.
Where they basically had a panel there. But today, the actual board members of the PUC that were there, and Michael Peavy, the president, was there. And during the oral communications where people from the public can come up and speak, in San Francisco, a gentleman came his second time saying he is getting deathly sick from the smart meter. He said PG&E is not doing anything to help him with this. And President Peavy of the PUC stated right at that moment, and this is going to be on video tomorrow, said to the PG&E representatives in the audience, "You are going to put an analog meter on this man's house." And
so
he demanded
let's
that.
Turn to Santa Cruz, because
so
I know we had a guest in the studio, Alan Fisher, who stated when he tried to stop the installation of a PG&E meter in his apartment, admittedly he didn't own the complex, he was renting it as Neary Lagoon from Mercy Housing, he was not able to do that, and instead he had his camera broken and he was shoved by the PG&E, Wellington installer
Energy,
of PG&E. Has anybody, what's been the success of the opt-out in Santa Cruz and Santa Cruz County? Have people been able to say no, and have the people left and gone away? What happens is
you call the delay list, but this is important for people to know who are on the delay list, is there seems to be that they're purging the list every 2 weeks or so. I've had this happen myself. I've actually had to call in 3 times, and each time I call in, they have no record of me being on the delay list. My neighbor, coincidentally, just today, who was on the delay list, came home from the grocery store to find Wellington in her yard just about to install, even though she was on the delay list and missed the first round of installations. But they seem to be purging the list. And
how long ago
back
was that first installation attempt and this one?
Probably about 3 weeks ago.
And what did the Wellington...
They never even tried to install last time because she was on the
delay
list.
So she was able to get them to stop.
Well, by doing the phone list, and they just skipped over her house. They didn't even try because she was on the delay list.
No, I mean when she came there and found them in the yard.
Today?
Yes.
Yeah, she said, "I'm on the delay list. Get out of my yard."
And then they left. Did they demand proof it was her residence? Or?
Not that I had a very brief
So they didn't break her camera or shove her around?
No, but there's
that's
different
nice.
There's different installers who have
and the police didn't come and pal up with the Wellington installer and say everything's rosy.
There's some installers who are getting reputations out there. We'll just say that
the police department I'm concerned about. The police department is unwilling to take a complaint of assault and trespass
That is very concerning, and we're planning on following up.
It should be said that Alan, when he came on the air, he doesn't really, since he doesn't own the property, it's unclear what his rights are in terms of...
But pushing him and breaking his camera...
is a form of assault.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And that gets very interesting.
Bob, do you have any comments on any of this that you would like to say?
Well, we've not talked about the ordinance at all, which
let's talk about that.
5084.
This is a county ordinance that was passed, January?
January. Santa Cruz County was January.
I'm taking a guess that John Leopold headed this off. Just taking a guess.
Passed unanimously.
His name is on there. I understand.
It was passed.
This is an ordinance. And what is the key to the ordinance? Don't read it. Just tell me what it says.
The ordinance is this ordinance shall take effect immediately based on the findings by the Board of Supervisors that this ordinance is necessary for the protection of the public health, safety, and general welfare. It's a moratorium on smart meter installations in Santa Cruz County. It was adopted, I think it was January...
and it's been ignored, as I understand.
January 7th.
It's been completely ignored. Basically, PG&E is not recognizing local laws.
5-1, my question would be, have. First of all, I'm baffled that the Board of Supervisors would even take this on, which seems to me to be clearly not within their jurisdiction.
Well, so that is debatable.
Now, come on, now I let you talk for a lot of time. You keep cutting me off, and I don't like raising my voice.
Personally. That was a quick comment. I said it's debatable. Keep going.
Okay. I really don't care to raise my voice. To me, it's a
You have 4 minutes. Either raise your voice or be quiet.
The Board of Supervisors went this route, where it appears they don't have jurisdiction, and also it raises the issue to me: who owns the meter? And I would think it would be PG&E. I think this is difficult legal territory.
Who owns
what
the
house? What I want to ask is: out of all the five supervisors that jumped on this bandwagon, how many of them are out there with you protesting and demanding the recall of Sheriff Wolwag?
Okay, first of all, just so you know, we got support once again from the Board of Supervisors because Santa Cruz County joined the Jim Tobin-led protest at the PUC demanding opt-out solutions. So they, again, unanimously joined that just, I think, six or eight weeks ago. So, again, that was another show of support from the County Board of Supervisors unanimously joining that with the towns of Fairfax, Marin, and now I think it's about 20 cities and counties that have joined that. So, again, that's another reinforcement of that their support.
And that's very different from this ordinance. I mean, to do that, I mean, I would agree with that. Opt out.
Let's talk about the ordinance.
Yeah,
let's talk about the ordinance.
That's right.
Excuse me. Has any county which has passed such an ordinance been successful in stopping the installation of these meters?
So far, Fairfax. There have not been installations in Fairfax, and they're probably.
And what is the reason that Fairfax has been successful and other counties and cities have not?
That's questionable, and we're still waiting to see what happens. But their mayor. Is actually vehemently opposed to this and has taken a very proactive role in
Yeah, but if the issue is, as Bob says, it's not in their jurisdiction, if the issue
this
is...
This is where it's going to get very
well,
interesting.
Well,
the question is, what is the difference between Fairfax and Santa Cruz in terms of why is Wellington and PG&E stopping there if it's Wellington?
My guess is that it's path of least resistance.
I see. Okay, so... The Grange, last night at the Grange, there was the mass meeting around the petition to recall Sheriff Phil Wolwag. I invited him to be on the air. His secretary called me back 3 hours ago and said he regrets he has other engagements. I invited him to come on Sunday, and she said she would pass on the word to him. But frankly, if he is on the air, people who live in this building don't want him to come into the studio. They're a little nervous about law enforcement. I've told him he can call in. I don't think he's going to call in, but he did... make an unusual appearance at this meeting of essentially hostile to smart meter people.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Okay, so last night it was the Freedom Forum that takes place at the Live Oak Grange. They hold this once a month, tend to be, sort of libertarian constitutional issues, and they've had three or four meetings on smart meters. And last night the main topic was the recall of the sheriff. And... unannounced, I believe he was invited, but unannounced, all of a sudden, we had a surprise guest. It was Sheriff Wolwag and his wife suddenly came through the door and sat down very politely. A few people said hello, and we went on with the meeting as planned. And Joshua Hart, who is the director of Smart Meters, gave his...
Stop Smart Meters.
Yeah, stop... What did I say?
Smart Meters.
Oh, okay, stopsmartmeters.org.
Mm-hmm.
Gave his speech, I think, very tactfully, very gracefully, eloquently, as to the
why
exact reason.
Why is this scumbag sheriff not enforcing the law,
was
that
not,
sort of thing?
It wasn't in that tone whatsoever.
Well, that'll be my speech. I mean,
And the question was, there's an ordinance that has not been enforced since January. This ordinance has been in place. We've asked for public comment. We've asked for meetings with the sheriff.
Has he refused?
He just has ignored them.
Uh-huh. So he's declined to meet with you.
Declined, yeah, and not even an answer,
When the rubber hits the road and the referendum hits the street, suddenly he's there with his wife.
Well, so some questions are saying, whatever happens with the recall, this got the sheriff out of his, I'll say, nest.
Isolation.
Now he's engaged, and he was there, and we completely respect him and commend him for coming. And it was actually a magical moment last night, dare I say, I get excited about these things.
And you have a smart meter. Did you hug the smart meter, too?
It was a warm, fuzzy moment. Well, I have to say, he's an incredibly likable, very nice guy. No one at all was thinking, oh, what a jerk, how out of touch he was. But a lot of people's response, words that came up were impotent, ostrich, ducking, passing the buck, and playing it safe. So, very likable person, but the question is he a leader? Is he willing to take a risk? Is he willing to stand up for our local laws? And there is precedent that local laws can trump the PUC. And
the
other
precedent would be?
I've had a few. I'm not an attorney, but I've read a few things. There was something in Mendocino where there was pesticide spraying, and then there was a ballot issue where Mendocino County actually elected to actually ban that pesticide spraying, and then what would it be, the FDA or EPA?
That's not the PUC.
What about the Apple?
But it's the same principle that local laws.
No, it did not.
Can trump, and they actually have the right to protect the health and well-being of their citizens. And that is so that actually succeeded in the California Supreme Court.
When you reference
just so you know,
when you have a reference to it and you can cite it, and you can point me to a website, I'll believe you.
I will. I'd be happy to email that to you
if I might. Just briefly.
Sure, but remember, we want to hear what WOAC said. We don't have him in the studio. And you weren't there, and he was.
I want to hear
he
it, too.
He does, as
we don't
sheriff.
Have much time. We're over time now.
He has the ability and authority to enforce the law.
Did he say he could do that?
He right now says he does not have the authority, and he says it's preemptive. And that's an easy answer. That's what the mayor in Santa Cruz says. That's what everyone chirps, because that's the safe
answer. But that's not
answer.
What the mayor of Fairfax says, or is it?
No, they are going to try and protect themselves. We'll see what actually comes.
Is he going to send the police force into Fairfax to stop them?
We're going to see what happens. The police is on call. I can't speak for them because I am not the mayor there, but my understanding is they already have an alert network set up with neighborhoods and phone numbers to call the police and such to report
when
Wellington shows up.
A model might be followed. Bob.
Yes.
You know, the Board of Supervisors, if they want to speak as leaders before the PUC, great, more power to them. But they want to put out a bogus ordinance to please a bunch of crackpots. I say they're bottom feeding, and they ought to be ashamed of themselves. Now, come on. Let me finish this now. WOAC is, like any public official that hits that level, with very rare exception, going to be a middle-of-the-road non-vote rocker. He's going to go to the right parties. That's how he got elected, with very rare exceptions. I was thinking about in the South when they had to bring in federal troops to get the local people to change. You know, I'm sure there's some flexibility. Maybe what's happening in Fairfax will move the PUC in a certain direction. It doesn't make sense to me, Jeff, that if you want to opt out, that you can't, and they wouldn't have a policy in place. I don't fully disagree with you, okay, in terms of legal procedure and the rights of the individual, right?
Yeah.
But I look at this ordinance with the three pages of whereas, and I say...
Where would you draw the line?
What
about the light brown apple moth spray? Do you think that's okay to just spray all over our homes?
No, I do
okay.
not. No,
so would
down,
you want
you remember,
a sheriff to actually
enough,
stand
remember,
up?
If you, I might. If you remember, that came down from the state, right?
Yeah.
It was the Medfly, if I'm right, or was another one even after that. Okay, these are coming down from above. If there was enough of a support in the community to block it, it might happen. If you were to get enough support to block these, you might be able to get support, enough public support to actually have some
impact. It's coming. The momentum is building.
I
the numbers
to disagree
are coming.
With you very vehemently on the concept of electromagnetic radiation
okay.
being other than incredibly beneficial in a transforming way to which we take for granted.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to reveal something about myself personally. I am pretty much retired at this point as a computer programmer. I am a techie person. I made my living designing software and very smart software that serves an excellent purpose that customers use. I also had Wi-Fi internet being beamed into my mountain home because Comcast was not there. I also personally, I got Lyme disease, which has screwed up my immune system. And it took me 2 years to get back to a normal functioning human. I can tell you firsthand that chemicals, as far as perfume, vapors, and such, and electronic devices, such as radio devices, affect me. Ever since my neighbor's smart meter went in, I wake up about 3 to 5 times per night, and I haven't had a good night's sleep since the smart meters went in, and I've never had sleep disorders in my entire life. And there are thousands of people who've never had this situation before, and they're finally connecting the dots, and there's thousands of complaints coming in saying that ever since the smart meter went in, they're having sleep problems, they're having ringing in the ears, and they're having a whole host of symptoms. And this is from random places and people who have never had these symptoms before. And it takes them 6 weeks, 6 months to connect the dots and figure out what's going on. And then they leave their home for 2 months or 2 weeks to go on vacation, and all their symptoms disappear. And so you're telling me right now, as far as someone with a peanut allergy or such, just because you don't experience it and you don't understand it, that somebody, when they're around peanut butter, might have an incredible reaction and go into anaphylactic shock. Just because it doesn't happen to you does not mean that it doesn't happen to other people. And there is lots of research that clearly shows that microwaves have biologic impacts on
people. There's one study of one person. One study of one person. Let's be clear about this. One study.
Have you looked at Henry Lai's studies that were done in the Navy back in the
70s? I let you talk. You got this. You got this habit. I don't know what kind of socializing you've got.
Bob, lay off the personal and get to your point. Go ahead. I mean, make your point if you'd like.
The point is, there's one study of one person in Louisiana that was self-diagnosed that has the potential for being credible. The rest of it is absolutely off the charts.
And your basis for this is
where does that come from?
There's no clinical proof.
Excuse me,
Bob.
What are you citing?
I'm citing the one study that has been.
What is that study?
It is electromagnetic hypersensitivity evidence for a novel neurological syndrome, posted September 5th, 2011. I'm sure Jeff knows about this. It was done by Louisiana State University. I've got another piece of paper on this, Andrew Marino.
Okay, good. Let me ask Jeff, are there any other studies that you're aware of?
One person.
There are multiple studies.
Name a few.
Why do you say they're not legit?
Because they would be cited.
Okay, hold it, guys.
By WHO.
They are. Why do you think the WHO just changed the status of non-ionizing radiation to now a possible carcinogen? Did they just do that for the fun of it?
The question I have for you, Jeff, is what studies are you citing that you feel are, in addition to the, Bob says there's only one study in the world that shows this, one legitimate study. You're saying there's more than, name a couple of studies that you think are legitimate.
Multiple studies. First of all,
I'm just thinking, what good is it going to us for you to cite studies?
Well, I don't want to get, if
you know
people want to go
do?
And Google it, just look up, Henry Lai is one, L-A-I. He's a professor at the University of Washington, and he was hired by the Navy back in the 70s to do these initial microwave studies. So that's a good place to start.
Well, let me
one sentence, Robert, please. It's WHO. Are there any health effects? A large number of studies have been performed over the last 2 decades to assess whether mobile phones pose a potential health risk. To date, no adverse health effects have been established as being caused by mobile phone use. Potential is one thing. They're going to study it. They're going to come out with some kind of
We understand the difference in wording.
Bob, I'm going to ask, if I went back in time and looked at research papers from the 60s, I could say find the same wording on tobacco, asbestos, and lead paint. It's the same game that they play. The telecom industry is taking the exact same tact and strategy as the tobacco industry. In fact, a lot of the PR firms and attorneys and researchers, I call them scientific whores, basically, they set themselves up to work for industries to create ambiguous studies that reach no conclusions so they can kick the can on down the road. If you find the industry-funded studies come to no conclusion, the non-industry-funded studies find there's definitely problems, and
so
there's
what
never
I would
been
like,
studies.
What I would like,
children. There is
turning,
one.
We're turning it down. We heard that before, Bob, and I understand you've made your point. Why don't you, Jeff, post on IndieBay, and I'll give you the website, a listing of the studies that you think demonstrate
this. I'll do a top five.
This. And, Bob, why don't you look at the study?
Why don't you, Bob,
post under him, you regard these studies as either inaccurate or inadequate or perhaps contradicted by other studies that you've found. That's a way that a person who is, you know, just listening to this on the radio doesn't know what the hell is going on because they don't have the studies in front of them, so they can't really tell. But, yeah. You know, maybe if people really are interested in this issue, and many are, they can compare these issues. And if you want to, folks, if you want to find out, and I'm hoping that I know that after our last debate, Josh Hart did post, and Bob, you posted some comments too. You can go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which is Santa Cruz Indie Media, and I will. What I'd like you to do is post a story about these are the studies, and Bob, post a response. No, this isn't true. There's only one study. If you still believe that to be the case, you know, and that'll be one way of, you know,
objective
carrying this on.
Based study that one person.
We have a caller. Maybe this is a scientist calling in. Let's find out. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with the Big Three. Hello. Go ahead.
¿Habla español?
Poco español, pero es un programa en inglés. ¿Qué quieres?
Hablo con este. ¿Cuándo vienes de Sandino?
¿Sandino? ¿Quieres Sandino?
Ya.
Yeah. Ya, no está aquí. Sandino se puede llamar otro número de teléfono. ¿Tiene un lápiz?
Ya.
Yeah. 427-4523. Es la línea para mensajes. Disculpe, mi español es muy malo. Lo siento.
Yeah, yo sé quién es tú.
Yeah, leave a message on that line. See if you can, and you'll be able perhaps to reach Sandino. And thank you. We're in the middle of something else, so good luck.
Okay.
Buena suerte. Bye bye.
Can I ask a question really quick?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, Bob, do you have children or grandchildren?
I have step-grandchildren.
Okay. How old are they?
What difference does it make? Ask your
question. I'm going to tell you, I have a 2-year-old daughter.
And okay. I know, you're afraid of Wi-Fi.
No. Right. Would you recommend right now having a child sleep with a cell phone on their head every night?
Of course not. Let's not be stupid.
Why not?
Come on.
Why not?
Because it's a transmitter. You know. Hey, come
Wait
on.
Wait a minute.
You
what?
You heard what
you
I said.
You would not have
a
baby
have
sleep
a conversation,
with a
conversation. We're going to do it in a Let way me, that's meaningful.
No. Well,
go ahead.
What
make
is
a
your
statement,
reason?
No
what is your reason for not letting a baby sleep with a cell phone on their head every night?
It's a transmitter, and if for no other reason than the thermal effects, of that transmitter. It would be dangerous.
That would be within FCC
guidelines. On the Stop Smart Meters website, it says that smart meters have more power than cell phones. Now, if you go to Wikipedia and you look up mobile phones, you'll see that immediately disputed. Now, one would be an absolute idiot to hold a cell phone to your head for 5 hours a day. It's a transmitter.
Okay.
It's
so
a
radio transmitter. So let me ask a question. Let me ask the question.
Oh, you go ahead.
What do you think about 40 smart meters on the exterior wall of an apartment building with a crib literally 10 inches away from those 40 smart meters sleeping there every single night for the next 5 years of their life? Is that a good idea? Is that any way similar?
According to the smart meter site, the distance that
they cite.
I'm citing the documentation, Jeff. The documentation says 20 centimeters. You know how long that is in inches? That's about 7.64, 7.84, something like that, inches.
Okay.
That says a safety margin for that. 100 smart meters, if there's an appropriate distance, I don't see the destruction. If
If you felt bad about this,
move.
But right now, the information is not out there. Should there be a warning?
If you feel bad about it,
I'm not
don't
saying
ask
for
me.
That.
Should there be a warning about it?
I'm saying for innocent babies and families who have not been educated on this issue.
Move. If you feel like you should educate people to move away from a bank of 100 smart meters,
We should educate and warn families.
Now, the smart meter puts out less than 1 watt. You realize that, don't you?
How much does a cell phone put out?
It puts out In fact, I had the documentation.
Okay, guys.
It's over that. It's more than that in most cases.
Okay, so 40 smart meters next to a baby's crib, 12 inches away, you don't have a problem, and you don't think anybody should be warned not to do that. You don't think there should at least be a leaflet sent out or a warning that, hey, you might not want
to
put your baby's
head. Well, you know, I'm not calling the
shots
over a PG&E, by the way.
Okay.
I'm not. Now, if I was calling the shots at PG&E, it would be a very different procedure going on.
Okay, so what would you do?
What's going on right now? Okay, what I would have done going out the gate would have been to have done, to have created, number one, an opt-out program immediately, understanding that you're going to pay more. And if there's a problem with smart meters, you might want to consider moving if you're living in an apartment building and you
feel
like you're too close.
So people should basically be forced to leave their home
because of a smart meter. We live in a complex society.
You raise
issues like peanut allergies, and people have hay fevers and the like. They have to adjust their lives. There may well be people that have difficulty, even if it's psychosomatic, with electromagnetic radiation. And I wish them the best. Maybe they should think about moving to a place where there's less radiation. There's a place in West Virginia that's apparently attracting quite a few of these.
You're going to tell families that have this issue that has electric sensitivity, or if there's a family with an autistic child who reacts to wireless meters.
How do you know they react?
Okay, guys, this is fine. We're going to roll off on this one. Guys, I'm becoming a smart host here, and guys, I'm going to allow these two to debate, but I don't know if we want to. It's not on the air, folks. It's not on the air. You can take it outside the studio if you'd like. It's okay with me. Coming up next, I would like to kind of give you a news flash. Bob, thank you. I want to thank my two guests for this stimulating debate and discussion here in the studio, completely out of the control of the the boss of the studio. But that's fine, because we don't need no bosses, no leaders, no gods, know our story here. We've been talking with Bob LaMonica, who is a local activist and a person who has his own perspective on things and doesn't jump into the crowd, whatever the crowd, which way the crowd seems to be running. He takes his own stance. And we also have Jeff Narwhal, is that correct?
I wish. I love narwhals. They're the coolest whale in the ocean.
I think it was Alex.
It's
Narwhal.
Nordahl.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's sorry about that. But
we
can call you.
I'll go by a whale with a unicorn.
Friend of the narwhals,
like
Jeff Nordahl, and Jeff is going to be posting on IndieBay. I hope a follow-up to this show that will enable folks to, look over the situation and perhaps in a more measured fashion determine what they think about the studies involved. Though I think probably it's already on stopsmartmeters.org, but if you could post links, that would be helpful.
Ooh.
And Bob, who is very eager to talk about this subject,
how about a nice conciliatory statement?
Will also be Bob. Will you be posting something in response?
In this case,
Bob.
Needs of the many outweighing the needs of the few. The guy's asking, are those alleged sufferers being ignored, and are the dangers really as bad as some quote fringe anti-smart meter sites claim? Is certainly worthy of an intelligent discussion.
Fair enough. Okay. And we've had quite a debate here.
It's not turning into the fringe, though. A lot of people are being affected.
And there are
So the thing, what we're saying right now is err on the side of caution. We don't know. If you're apathetic, you are basically being, lack of better terms, a lab rat.
Robert, you have a smart meter at your house, don't you?
I think the landlord put one in when I wasn't looking.
Are you affected?
I don't know, but because it's far away from me, like it's like 40 or 50 feet.
Not everybody, and by the way, it is cumulative. Some people get sensitized over years.
But
so
let me say this.
And not everybody's going to be affected.
Let me again point out, if people want to get involved with this WOAC recall petition, and I'd like to point out that there are numerous reasons why people might not like Phil WOAC, in spite of the fact that he's a nice guy, and finally, after 9 months, comes to a meeting to talk to people that he should have talked to 1 week after they called him up, if he were really interested in public input. How can they get in touch? How can they get a recall petition to circulate? And where will be the next meeting of this group?
That's being worked out right now. The first signatures were actually gathered last night at the Freedom Forum, but now we're actively seeking out strategies to actually start collecting signatures. And it's a great way to continue delivering the message about the smart meters.
We do have a caller.
So.
Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
free radio. What's so free about it?
Well,
hey, Uncle Robert.
Hey, David. We're talking about smart meters, and we're about to end that particular segment.
Sure.
I want to thank my two guests, and I guess you haven't got. If you've got a number, people can call if they want to get the copies of this petition.
Right now, I would say stopsmartmeters.org is the best way to contact people. And
check
everything.
Out stopsmartmeters.org. And if you want to find some way to deal with the crackpots, obviously, leading this movement, Bob, if you have a place that people can call for that particular...
They can post to Indie Media.
Ah, yes.
And if the Goebbels crowd over there agrees with your post, it'll stay.
There you go. All right. Thank you both. Feel free to hang. We're going to be talking about other things. David Silva, I may cut you off quickly because we have, I believe, you're calling in at exactly the same time. We're expecting a call on the arrest of Christopher Doyon, Curb Hugger Chris, who is now incarcerated by the feds in San Jose. He's been arrested for hacking the website of the Santa Cruz County. Apparently, they claim he is the infamous Commander X who did this. So we'll see, you know, where that leads. He actually, I mean, we may get him to do an interview from jail, but we may have his attorney on the phone. So is it possible I can get you to call back in a bit?
Sure. I survived my police assault, and I'll be here to report on it, whatever you need me, Robert.
Okay, well, I want you to, I don't know if I can reach you on the phone, so call me back in about 20 minutes.
Done deal.
All right, sounds good. Actually, you know, I'm thinking about that. Okay, I'm trying to turn down the mic there. I guess I lost David. I'm hoping to get this call from... What is his name? It's an attorney from Ventura, actually, who contacted one of our local... thank you both for coming into the studio. Thank you, Bob. Good discussion. Keep it up. And, you know, don't eat any smart meters for dinner. That would be a mistake. Okay. See you guys later. You're tuned to the stream of Freak Radio, www.freakradio.org. I'm your harried host, Uncle Robert Norse, and... call-in numbers here are 427-3772 and 469-3119. And with the call-in lines open, I'm hoping to get a call, and that could be my call, from San Luis Obispo. I believe the attorney who's representing Chris Doyon is on the road. Let's find out. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Jay Lederman calling.
Hey, Jay. I was just talking about you. You are an attorney at law down south.
That is correct. I'm in Ventura.
And you were contacted by one of our local heroes, Curb Hugger Chris Doyon, some months ago, and I guess you recently saw him in jail in San Jose?
That's correct. He's, he's being accused of a federal cybercrime, and he entered a plea of not guilty today and will be vigorously disputing those charges in the coming weeks, but at this point we've been provided no information, and other than to say that it was supposedly something involving the city of Santa Cruz's website, we really know nothing more than that.
And this crime he's accused of, you actually gave me the details when we spoke earlier, has a rather serious consequences if he's convicted, right?
He's charged with two counts. They carry up to 15 years in federal prison on them. That's correct.
Wow. And did Chris give you any, since we were on the radio, a blow-by-blow description of how he happened to run into federal agents who decided he was a criminal?
No. I actually just by happenstance, I was in the Bay for other... for other reasons, I have a lot of business up there, and I actually have both business and family, and I used to live there for many years. So I was there for other reasons and got a call this morning to come on down to the San Jose Federal Courthouse. So I went on down, found out that he was on calendar this afternoon, bought a suit, some shoes, a belt, went in a suit as opposed to jeans.
So you were able to sneak into federal court in jeans?
No. I actually had to. I went in to find out that it was in fact Chris Doyon that was there. Well, I knew it because I had received a call that my client was there and to come down, but I, you know, they don't necessarily always arraign them the same day in federal court. They generally do, but they don't always do that. So I arrived, you know, somewhere around 11 a.m. and was told it was on the 1:30 calendar, and frantically ran out and bought a suit and some dress shoes, a belt, a tie, and some dress socks.
Even though the hot weather might have made a swimming suit more appropriate?
Absolutely. Yeah. It would have been a lot more comfortable, yes.
So tell us about this arraignment and how it goes in federal court. I know I was in federal court like a decade ago when they were arresting us for, I don't know, sitting in a retired army base that we wanted turned over to the homeless, and they wanted instead to raise it and destroy the buildings or, you know, turn it into condos. I don't recall exactly which it was. But it's been a while since I've been in federal court. What are you mainly a federal attorney, or do you handle mostly cases in state court?
Actually, yes, I do mostly handle cases in state court, although I do have a background working for a fairly short period of time for a federal defender office. I spent about 7 years with the Ventura County Public Defender's Office. County office is a state office. And my practice is mostly state-based. I do some federal work. I concentrate as much as I can on medical marijuana. That's what I really enjoy. But I handle cybercrime cases. I've tried some before. I'm one of the, I don't know that there are that many people that are qualified in this area. I am qualified in the area, but, you know, if you ask me what I prefer state and medical marijuana. In fact, my partner and I have just written a book on California medical marijuana law that was published by NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. So,
and what name of that book is?
It's actually called Medical Marijuana Law in California, from NORML.
Huh.
We didn't get all that creative with the title.
Well, you know, I may want to contact you for another time to get an update on medical marijuana law in California, because I regularly follow that subject here as it impacts local people. We have an allegedly liberal city which actually is quite paranoid and police-dominated in its mentality of medical marijuana, at least in terms of the politicians, in spite of their so-called progressive credentials, which is a problem. I mean, we have only two medical marijuana outlets, and they have banned all other marijuana outlets in the city of Santa Cruz. We have a DA who believes that the only legitimate medical marijuana dispensing system is through collectives, so that essentially every distribution center in the state is illegal, including anybody that sets up in Santa Cruz County. Although recently, you know, he's been ignoring the politically hot potato cannabis people and going after some unfortunate folks like Roger Mensch and others. You may recall Mensch from the state case.
Of course, yeah.
You know, but I mean, I actually didn't call you to talk about this. I mean, although, you know, if you've got some thoughts on it, that's fine. You, how did you happen to run into Chris? I want you to do, you know, he was your client before. Is that something you can talk about, or is that something that's a little?
No, I can say that our attorney-client relationship, you know, certainly predates today. We've you know, sort of been acquaintances and have chatted for a while, which is why he knew to call me. But I, other than to say, you know, we got in touch through, you know, friend of a friend, mutual friend. You know, I don't think I'm betraying any confidences to say, you know, he had a couple questions about this or that, and I just, you know, friendly, you know, conversation got a call this morning.
Well, I'd say that, you know, Chris, for those who don't know, just, you know, are unfamiliar with Kerbucker Chris Doyen, as I call him, is an activist who I first became aware of summer before last, summer of 2010, when he joined the Peace Camp 2010 protests against the laws that criminalize homeless people at night in Santa Cruz, an ongoing protest in front of the courthouse that then moved to the City Hall area once deputies decided to use an archaic lodging law to criminalize political protest at night. And the city, in sort of a copycat fashion in its own way, suddenly declared City Hall a closed area at night, so it would be illegal to actually walk through there with a political sign, to get a drink of water, to read the agenda that's posted there. All these have become crimes in Santa Cruz after 10 o'clock at night, similarly with the library, other things that were done in order to specifically to quash the political protests in Santa Cruz, which Kerbugger Chris was a really strong leader who was particularly media savvy. And as I think I mentioned to you before when we spoke a couple hours ago, Jay, he, through his work on the internet and through his management of media activity, was able to generate more publicity even in the mainstream media, which is hostile to civil rights for poor and homeless people, than any protest in the last 25 years that I've seen around homeless issues in Santa Cruz City or county. So he's kind of a famous guy. Plus, of course, we understood he was taken into custody by the FBI here in Santa Cruz back in December when they confiscated his computer, apparently thinking he was involved in the shutdown of the Santa Cruz County website, because somebody did that and I guess made a claim that it was a, you know, that they were doing that to protest the Peace Camp 2010 prosecutions, the prosecution of a number of people who were doing nothing more than sleeping there peacefully or being there peacefully with signs and falling asleep, calling them lodgers, even though they were actually political protesters and there was no legal place for homeless people to go in Santa Cruz at night. And still is there is no legal place. There's a tiny token number of spots in a shelter or two. And it just doesn't exist. And that was something we were trying to restore civil rights for homeless people. Chris was a leading part of that. And we wondered what had happened to Chris. We were worried for his safety, many of us, because people apparently found his campsite abandoned and wondered what had happened to him. And there was a trial of his companions. Chris did not make the trial. And I guess there is a warrant out for his arrest for failing to appear at this bogus lodging trial where the attorney who you talked to earlier, Ed Fry, was himself convicted and sentenced to 6 months in jail and a bail of $50,000 before he could appeal. And the judge suddenly was reminded 2 weeks later that the real bail schedule said $110. So the judge suddenly reduced the bail by what? 5,000%, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've gone on for a bit. Any reaction to any of this?
Well, yeah, I think it's fantastic of the city and county of Santa Cruz that they want to solve the homeless problem by incarcerating them all. It's a fresh and novel approach, and I'm absolutely delighted that our federal government, which is, as we all know, is just rolling in cash, has joined that bandwagon and decided to do the same. It's a terribly thoughtful and innovative solution to an endemic societal problem, isn't it?
Yeah, although, it has to be said, they'd prefer to run homeless people out of town. They'd prefer to pretend that everything is okay. In fact, Chris and the other, I would say, scores of people who participated in this protest, about 40 of whom got these misdemeanor lodging tickets, and one of them still faces trial, Linda LeMaster. She'll be going to a trial probably in November unless the writ of habeas corpus, an unusual use of a writ of habeas corpus to try to stop the trial. She's not in prison, but they're using a writ as a format for an evidentiary hearing, succeeds. And that I've talked about that on the air before. There is a significant number of people who face the same charge that Chris Doyen faced. He was the first person arrested under this law in front of the county building. He had pneumonia when he was in jail, and when Linda LeMaster essentially sat with him because he would not leave, wanted to keep him company, look after his health, she was arrested, or actually cited, but now faces up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, as does Chris. I presume he also faces a failure to appear when he gets back to Santa Cruz if these
I would presume so.
Yeah.
So that's the that's what they define as compassion toward the homeless in Santa Cruz. That's that's a tragic tale.
Well, it's probably the same in Ventura, although I understand Ventura has a tent city, doesn't it?
It did actually for quite a while, and it went real well. It sort of faded out, but there's been discussions on and off about it coming back online. The problem with Ventura was that for a number of years in there was no winter warming shelter. They closed it, and there was absolutely no winter warming shelter at all. And so what they did was each winter, you know, they would, before the rains came, they would clean out the encampments by the river bottom, stating it wasn't safe. That was generally the area where homeless people made camp. They told them it wasn't safe, and then they didn't give them anywhere to go, so it became a situation of where they were chasing the homeless around, and then they found different ways to arrest them for this, that, or the other thing. I actually became heavily involved in that when I was a public defender in Ventura and had some of the city of Ventura's laws declared unconstitutional. And after that, they began, they allowed the tent city. And then I think it was about a year or even two after that, some winter warming shelters came back online from, I believe just after New Year's through the end of March is when they were available. That, you know, being the rainy season when it's dangerous in the river bottom. So, yes, I actually had a part in that, which is sort of why I was a natural match with Mr. Glam when we, you know, got together.
Well, I know that Glenn Maurer was famous in Santa Barbara for taking the, you know, the anti-homeless forces to the mat about a decade ago. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I am, and many people told me that the struggle in Ventura, you know, was somewhat like that. I think, as I recall, Glenn had much greater victories in terms of numbers than I did, but the same degree of success ultimately in convincing them through, unfortunately, it's always through litigation, and it's always on the backs of someone wrongly imprisoned, but ultimately was able to show them in Santa Barbara that their program was wrong, as I was able to do in Ventura, and hopefully eventually someone will be able to do in Santa Cruz. I don't know. I may well now become involved in that case in Santa Cruz, at least in some minor ways. So who knows? There may be still parts of that drama left unwritten and left unplayed.
We can use all the legal help we can get. It's really difficult for an attorney like Ed Frye to simultaneously stand up and speak about constitutional issues to sheriffs who are arresting him, bring a porta potty every night for homeless people to use when there is no bathroom open tonight other than the one he supplied for this protest. Now we have no bathroom for anybody after midnight unless you have a paying customer in a bar or something like that, or go to an all-night restaurant. You happen to, you know, be able to do that. And he also he was in the process of defending five homeless people on charges, and just, you know, it's as far as I'm concerned, it was too much, and he couldn't do it. And now, of course, his whole legal practice was going to fall apart when he was jailed. But finally, the legal community came together a little bit, shamed the judge into at least reducing his bail pending an appeal. But the appeal is likely to fail. And when the appeal fails, he'll go back to jail for 6 months unless, you know,
well,
judge. Go ahead.
I would hope not. You know, judges have the ability to recall sentences and revisit their sentences, and I would hope that someone recognizes that 6 months in jail for the simple crime of sleeping is disproportionate and actually really should offend the notions of substantial justice and fair play.
Shocks the senses, yeah. I mean, it is true that Judge John Gallagher, who gave this sentence,
First, he upheld the constitutionality of 647E, the state anti-lodging law, which has been used in different cities, perhaps even in Ventura, to go after political protesters who are sleeping, who often are homeless, but sometimes are not, as Linda LeMaster is not. She'll be facing a trial. But he also, when the sentence was brought back to him for modification, he declared he had no jurisdiction over modifying Ed Fry, the attorney's sentence. Instead, however, the DA was, apparently it's all in the hands of the DA, according to this. It's a very strange system, which I'd like to talk to you about more when we have more time. And I have another person or two who are going to call in. So I just want to return to the case of Chris Doyon, who is currently, for those who don't know, Curb Hugger Chris, an activist here in Santa Cruz. And I believe he tells me he was here in the 90s as well, but for some reason, I don't remember him from that period, but I certainly remember him from 2010 at Peace Camp 2010. He is currently in jail, and he needs a place to stay so he can get out pending, the trial?
Yes. I go back up. I'm hoping, actually, to be in Santa Cruz County on the morning of the 29th, that's a week from today, to try to do something about his warrant, see if we could, get some kind of status check on them. And then in the afternoon on the 29th, I will be back in federal court with him for it's a detention hearing is what it's called. It's in the common parlance, one might think of it as a bail hearing, bail or own recognizance hearing. And I'm hopeful that with some resolutions on some of these issues, especially where he can live, that we'll be able to get him out next Thursday on his written promise to appear. Because he's certainly, these are computer crimes. He's certainly no danger to anyone.
The federal authorities, though, have you talked to the prosecutor? Is the prosecutor willing to have him released on his own recognizance, or are they going to fight it?
The prosecutor wanted more information about background. Typically in federal court, when they're going to release someone on a signature bond, they will do a pretrial services report. And because of the timing of when he was brought in and, how he basically got to, by the time the FBI got him in there, it was afternoon, probably about 12:30. And court was at 1:30. They just simply didn't have time to do that report. So they begun the report, they began the report right after court. And it'll be presented to the judge on Thursday. And you can't, in fairness to the assistant U.S. attorney, you can't really expect them to take a position without knowing what the history is. For all they know, the person they could be saying, go ahead and leave might be a wanted axe murderer from
Jay.
Utah or something.
We have a caller. I don't know if this is another guest or a caller who has a question for you. Whoops, we had a caller. Looks like the caller faded. We were talking with Jay. Is it Lieberman?
It's Lederman with a D.
Lederman. You're no relation to the the infamous Lieberman.
No.
Hopefully not, yes. I'd like to do is on Sunday discuss this subject more fully. Currently, Chris is hanging his head in stir and fed in the federal pen in San Jose or whatever.
Probably. It's up to them where they were going to house him. They have a couple different options, but he may well still be in the detention center in San Jose as we speak.
Well, Perhaps we can get back to you on Sunday, or you can get back to us. Would that be a possibility?
Certainly, yes.
We can continue this discussion. We've been talking with Jay Lederman of Ventura, former public defender, current freedom fighter, if you will, or at least...
Thank you.
He fights with a suit and a tie, but even blue jeans, is that right? You're a blue jean wearer in federal court? That shows a certain independence.
I should have liked to have been...
No, okay, I think I got that detail wrong. But I appreciate your calling in. I appreciate your contacting me. And I feel free to leave me a message off air. We can talk more about other issues if you'd like. And I'll get back to you on Sunday morning. We have a long show, 9:30 to 1 on Sunday, from 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. We can talk more perhaps about Ventura homeless law, how the struggle has been going down there, and any new developments in Chris Doyen's case.
Okay. Sounds very good.
Hey, thank you, Jay.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, man. No problem.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's it for that particular topic. And I had a guest who is perhaps waiting patiently, not to mention David Silva, who's the only homeless person involved in this entire evening's activities. He apparently has been he was ticketed at City Hall last night for camping and sleeping. I'm going to kind of give a summary of what's happened to him and also invite Alex to call in, if I have his name right. I've always got people's names a little fumbled. This could be him calling in right now. David was ticketed, as was his companion, Billy, for sleeping in a city that has no legal place for homeless people to sleep, the overwhelming majority of them, when he went to the Homeless Service Center to try to get evidence that they were full and or that they had a place. Boy, we got lots of calls coming in here. He was refused that information. Well, let's see what we got. We have two people on the line here. We have both lines open. Please identify yourselves, callers.
Oh, hi, Robert.
Hey, this is Alex. Hey, Robert. This is DJ Matter Embryo. If you're waiting for a different call or whatever, I can call back later. I don't want to mess up your plan.
Sounds good. Call me back, DJ.
Okay, I will. And it's about a homeless issue down here. It's
I definitely
not just
want to hear about
one of my scenes now rambling. So.
Okay, no problem. But call me back. I like that.
I will, bro. Thanks for your show.
Thank you. And all right, is it Alec or Alex? Let's get this straight.
It's Alec Alnick, and the last name is pronounced DeRossi.
And you're a man who's recently written for Indie Bay. You wrote sort of a story with photos of an abusive stop, what sounded like an abusive stop in your description, by Officer Winston. Are you there? Hello? Whoops, I've lost you. Let's try again. Call me up. We're gonna do this right, believe it or not. Again, as I said before, David Silva, who is a person suffering with AIDS, is out there without he has no shelter at the moment, and he's getting camping tickets at City Hall. And I'll be doing more discussion of that if and when he calls in, or if and when we decide to go out there and start a protest with him. Hi there. We hope you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, it's Alex again.
Hey, Alex. So go ahead. I know that. You know, rather than talk about the story, which you've written about in some detail on Indie Bay, about this citation you saw downtown, and you're kind of a man with a camera, a wild man with a camera, perhaps.
Yeah, moving around a lot downtown.
A loose guy with a camera. You and your camera were at the Monday protest outside the DeSalle sort of secret Rotkin Matthews members only meeting at the Octagon or the National History Museum or whatever that place was?
Yeah, in the auditorium of the Museum of Art and History down there on Front Street.
Yeah, and so this was on Monday. I know I'd heard an update from Steve Plaich, one of our local activists, about this issue, and he apparently talked to you or saw some of this happen. You tell us about the scene. I mean, there was a little deal about it on Santa Cruz Patch, a news kind of service which generally serves as a PR rah-rah ground for the police department, but in some cases comes up with a little interesting this and that. But what was going on at the DeSalle, the DeSalle hearing? Did you get in? Did you try to get in? How many people got in, and why weren't people allowed in? There's a bunch of questions for you.
All right. Well, as you know, it was invitation only, and that's how it was billed in the media. So I don't know how many people went down there expecting to get in. And when I arrived there, quite a bit early, and actually Brad from Patch was the first person I photographed. So that started off the evening with him a certain way. But so there weren't too many people when I got there, maybe two of the DeSalle Santa Cruz people, and they were the what seemed to be the bulk of the protesters.
And how many people were? For people should understand that the some of the former city leaders who still conceive of themselves to be the spearhead of all that is good and virtuous in the city, Mike Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews, want a, what is it, I don't know, $100 million desal plant. I'm not sure how much it's going to cost, but it's pretty expensive. And
you know, they're even saying at this point, they're still in the design phase, they can't even really estimate the cost, and they're thinking, you know, $100 million conservatively.
Right, and so this is those who are opposing it wanted to have a real debate and discussion, and apparently this wasn't to be allowed. They were not allowed into the meeting. We have a caller. I'm going to bring him or her in and see what's happening with that. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Alex and Robert.
Hi, Alex and Robert. David Silva here.
Hey, David, I've already mentioned that you were ticketed at City Hall last night and that you you and your associate Billy were ticketed.
Charlie and I both got a camping ban ticket, 36.01C.
That's with camping equipment with intention to remain overnight. Did you tell the police officer you intended to remain overnight?
I told him he just fell asleep and caught us off guard.
I see.
He says all he cares about is out of sight, out of mind. There's been complaints. I got to get you out of sight, out of mind. He didn't speak English all that well.
Did he offer to what? Cement you into a wall, possibly, or
possibly? You know, he didn't know that. He would have obeyed that order, I'm sure.
And so, were other people also sleeping at City Hall?
Yes, it started growing. It was real, real quiet, private little place. You know, for a while. Then a couple nights there's a tent. It's kind of yellow and bright, and it's, you know, for those of us who are just trying to hide out for a night's sleep, it's nice to, people are brave enough to attract people to our attention. But
how many people were sleeping there?
I don't know, because, we always just crawl into our corner and just stay there and then leave real quickly. It's pretty crowded. It's been pretty crowded, but it's cleaned out now. All downtown's cleaned out.
David,
I'm sorry, I'm talking fast.
You need to slow down, but also, were you given the option to leave?
No, I was not.
So you and he were both ticketed.
I requested the option. I requested his name. Requested that. I didn't get that until I got the ticket.
So you got a ticket. This is a ticket for over $100. But when you took it to the Homeless Service Center to show that you had proof that you were on the waiting list, which would mean automatic dismissal of the ticket from Nancy Lou Biscotti, the Homeless Service Center.
Nancy Lou's version and the River Street's shelter version is different.
So what were you told when you tried to get this documentation?
Nancy Lou told me that I didn't need to worry about it. There was just an automatic system where the city attorney gets the ticketed people on the list, and then they compare it to the different shelters' waiting list.
And River Street shelter?
There's no time to talk about anybody being able to coordinate what days and what bureaucrat takes care of what when. And how accurate this is at all.
David, what did the River Street shelter tell you?
River Street Shelter said, however, we will be looking out for it, and we will expect something from the city attorney, and we will
This is in accord with the law passed by the city attorney in response to the protests last fall and late summer.
Yes, yes.
However, what we asked them to do, and what Monica Martinez, head of the Homeless Service Center, said she does do, is when you ask for proof that you're on the waiting list, they will give you a slip of paper that says you're on the waiting list, so you can show it to a police officer and say, "Hey, Mr. Police Officer, ticket me. I'm on the waiting list, and I'm not really amenable to the camping ban," because there are two sections to that particular law. One says, as you say, tickets shall be dismissed by the city attorney. The other says, this law shall not apply to those who are on the waiting list. So if you have...
May be in violation, of some future warrant or something. It really pisses me off, Robert.
Well, what I'm saying, David, is when you attempted to get proof you were on the waiting list, apparently Nancy Lou...
I gave them my cell phone with the River Street phone number. All you had to do is push the button.
And they would not give you a piece of paper stating that you were on the waiting list.
They didn't speak English that well.
What I'm saying is Nancy Lou Biscotti would not give you a slip of paper.
No. She said it's all handled just by the list coming from the city attorney's.
Gotcha.
Anything
you want to add?
I have to count on their bureaucracy
David, I've got 7 minutes, and I've got someone else on the line talking about the Don Lane sandwich episode.
Yes, let's listen to this. Okay, I'll try to catch it. Bye.
Yes, thank you, David. Go ahead, and you're up next.
Is that me?
That's you. Now, are you on the 427 line or the 469 line?
The 469.
Okay, go ahead. So you photographed a few people, and there was a relatively large crowd, small crowd there on Monday, trying to, oppose the desal plant and propose alternatives and get into a closed meeting from Rotkin and Matthews.
Yeah, kind of what I'd call a medium crowd, 12 to 20 people total at the peak.
Okay.
And very active, mostly from that group, DSAL Alternatives. Maybe there were Transition Santa Cruz members there. It was really hard to tell, but the literature they were passing out seemed to be, you know, shared between the groups, but mostly published by the DSAL Alternatives group. Ed Fry was out there. He was handing out a little flyer with his website, fullspectrumdemocracy.org, on it, and I saw Steve Plaich, and then there was a freelancer from Good Times, J.M. Brown was there from the Sentinel, and then Brad Kava with some of his reporter friends, actually a reporter from the LA Times was out there too, but he wasn't officially reporting. And so yeah, I went with the intention of photographing, you know, the group, people entering, and just seeing what's going on.
And did you get people coming? Who showed up to this meeting that was allowed in? Who were the privileged few?
Well, that I identified a few people beyond what the Sentinel reported. Well, just really Mark Premack was the only person I positively ID'd that the Sentinel didn't list.
Yeah, Mark
Sentinel also listed John Leopold, the county supervisor in Ellen Prairie.
So yeah, and then, go ahead.
And then as far as acting council members, Don Lane was the only one. Other dignitaries, quote unquote, were Gary Griggs, you know, the UCSC professor, the head of the Long Marine Lab, and also a...
So we had the Mucky Mucks coming in. Did any of the protesters attempt to enter the building, and were they turned away?
In a group, when there were most of them there, they did not, you know, attempt to enter. At near the starting time of the event, the group of protesters kind of dwindled a bit, and they were saying that they could get in if they wanted to, and but none of them wanted to. And at that point, they were actually encouraging me to go in, and I didn't think they would let me in, but I tried, and I went in.
So wait a minute, let me understand this. The group decided to let the protesters in?
Yeah, I guess the way they were doing it is they had empty seats, and they were writing in names on the list and just trying to keep a count. So I guess, I don't know who made that decision, but it looked there were just some attendants out handling the list. I think they worked for the Museum of Art and History, actually.
So,
and they must have been instructed, I'm guessing, to let people in to fill up the empty seats.
And there were, so you finally went in yourself?
I did go in.
How many people were inside?
Approximately 50.
So it was a larger crowd inside than outside.
Oh yeah.
And you didn't know, you didn't notice all. You noticed the one person who wasn't mentioned was former council member and architect Mark Premack.
Mark Premack, yeah, he's currently working on that West Side development, I believe, on Delaware.
Why didn't the critics want to go into the meeting? Do you know?
You know, I think they've just heard that side so many times, and what I found from listening to the presentation, it was exactly the same as the presentation I've heard on community TV at least twice. So I've heard it twice myself.
So it was the same presentation.
Exactly the same. And the comment period was handled by they were accepting questions written down on cards, and then they would choose from the cards, to, you know, which questions they would answer.
Who is emceeing this whole thing?
Bill Coker, and then the water director from SoCal.
So it was the pro DSAL people.
Oh yeah, yeah. There was no opposition in any way. Mm-hmm. And then I guess Cynthia Matthews was officially the MC. You know, she didn't do much presentation, and then Rotkin was not there. There was an ACLU meeting that evening.
Actually, the ACLU meeting was postponed for lack of a quorum. It will be happening next week. You might want to check that one out. That's going to be next Monday, 7 o'clock at the Loudon Nelson Center.
Oh, interesting. Thanks.
As far as I understand it, well, they'll be discussing the civil liberties of smart meters, civil liberties of... city council telling you can't be there once you've made a mock Nazi salute, even if it...
Oh, great, great.
And then the other one is going to be the issue of how come ordinary people can have dogs, but panhandlers can't downtown.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'd love to hear what Rodkin has to say about these issues.
Indeed, indeed. He, and he, of course, is the secretary or the treasurer of the ACLU at the current time.
Oh, okay. I didn't know his exact position.
Yeah, he's usually, you know, in there somewhere.
Go ahead. See how he fits in there. But
so anyway, you apparently needed a ham sandwich from Don Lane, and what happened there?
Yeah, it was some kind of a tortilla. I called it a quesadilla, but I guess it was some kind of tortilla sandwich. Right at the beginning of the evening, actually, right when I got there, probably about 7:15, I had just taken one picture of Brad Tava, and then I noticed that Don was sitting on the steps of the Museum of Art and History, about halfway down towards the McPherson Center side, and he was sitting on the steps, eating his sandwich, almost like lying on the steps. In a city, I'm guessing she was a city employee. I don't know her position or name. And then Bill Coker was standing there.
This was inside the building or out inside at the meeting itself?
It was outside the meeting. He'd gotten there early for a snack and was eating outside right there on the steps. So definitely, he was casual on the street. He likes to sit on the street.
And then, of course... then the sandwich situation came up.
Yeah, as soon as I saw him, my first thought was, oh, interesting, Don sitting on the sidewalk, eating, just like someone might be on Pacific sitting. But, you know, obviously at Pacific Avenue, they'd get rousted. But Bill Coker was standing there, too, and I thought, oh, how interesting, considering, you know, the recent sort of epic hubbub between the two of them. You know, it's interesting to see them chatting in this sort of off-hours meeting. So I just immediately, instinctively kicked in and took the photo. And my second thought was, oh, it's not going to look good. Don's eating. But Don looked up and I took one more. So about two spaced between about 10 seconds. And he just immediately started yelling at me.
Now, why do you think he was upset that you were taking his photo? Was he? I take it you in the past you've done photo work showing discrimination against homeless people on Pacific Avenue through the enforcement of the sit ban on Pacific Avenue. Were you doing this to show that sort of city officials have an exemption that ordinary people don't?
Yeah, that they and probably there's a really a legal exemption they have because. Through selective enforcement, they're just not ever going to be bothered. But also, there's that sense of entitlement that he obviously was possessing right there in that moment, where he was almost lying on the steps, and I don't believe that was the official purpose of the steps. It's definitely great with me, but he was doing something that
it's actually illegal to lie. I mean, maybe it's illegal to sit down on 95% of Pacific Avenue sidewalks, but it's illegal to lie down on 100%. Of the sidewalks anywhere in the downtown area. Lying, except for politicians who are making speeches, is illegal in downtown business districts in Santa Cruz. I don't know if you knew that.
Well, I guess he's not, no, I didn't know that technically. I guess he's technically sitting on the steps. I'm looking at the photos now. I haven't published them yet. But it's almost like lying, the way his back was against the steps as well.
Was he on private property or public property?
This is part of the McPherson Center, so I'm assuming it's public property.
Well, I don't know. McPherson Center is maybe privately owned. I'm not sure.
I'm really not sure. He was having that discussion with Ed Fry, so you might.
Did they have that discussion before or after your photographing?
This was after the photographing. He had thrown the sandwich at me.
Now, tell me what happened about this sandwich thing. Give me the blow-by-blow or the bread-by-bread or whatever.
Well, as soon as I had taken that second picture, he just started yelling at me, and I said, oh, come on now, Don, you're a public official, you're the vice mayor, you're at a private invite-only DSAL meeting in public space, Bill Coker's right here, this is about one of the most prime times to take a photo of a public official, and, I tried to have a discussion with him, but he wound up starting to use a lot of expletives with me.
What kind of expletives?
Well, Don uses the F word a lot.
Wait a minute. He didn't say fuck you, did he?
He said, I think he did say fuck you directly to me, and he said fuck a lot in a variety of contexts. I believe fuck was the main word he said. And normally I love the word, but in that context where someone's using it in a violent, you know, to try and intimidate you and to make me stop taking pictures, and then also his body language, he thrusts himself at you when he talks this way, and he also, the tone of his voice is just, he was in a full-on temper tantrum, and I've actually seen him conduct discussions after a city council meeting in the same sort of tone where he just gets really out of control with citizens, you know, where he's invited citizens to have a discussion with him after the meeting, and he'll get in the same sort of tone. But I would say this time it was a bit worse, and he was just having a full temper tantrum. He said I wasn't treating him like a human.